With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom. Simply visit www.realitycheck.radio/donate to make a difference today.
You're on Reality Check Radio. It's Real Talk with Rodney Hyde. Lovely to have you along this morning. And remember, you can send me a text at 2057, email me inbox at realitycheck.radio. Our next guest has been recommended by you, our listeners, more than any other guest we've ever had on. I have been inundated by requests to have our guest on, mainly because of my love affair with raw milk and the shocking length to which our government has gone to shut good milk down. And people have said, oh, you've got to get this gentleman on. You have to talk to this gentleman. And it's Glenn Herod. Good morning, Glenn.
Oh, that's great. Thanks for having me. And we've got such a supportive crowd of people. And
oh, you do?
Oh, I'm so grateful. And we're here, Happy Cow, because our crowd has supported us. And since 2019, we've raised $1.2 million from our crowd to basically enable us to make it possible for small-scale family farmers to be able to sell their milk to the local community, because it's actually really, really hard to do.
You can't believe how impossibly hard it is to do. We had a lovely couple who were supplying us with milk in Wellington, and they jumped through every hoop that MAF gave them, and then some. Cost them a huge amount of money, had lawyers involved. They sold the most beautiful milk. If you went to visit them, they'd show you around their cows and their farm. They were so proud of it. Their milk sustained my family and our little children when they were babies and then toddlers and then on into school years. And everyone blessed them and loved their milk. And then the government came after them and just broke them.
Well, there's a couple of things. There's one, the regulatory thing that you have to get through, and that is doable. It's not possible. It is a little bit of a pain, and it is work, and there's a cost to that work. But it's actually really hard when you are smaller scale, you don't have volume to have a sustainable business. And I think, you know, I had a similar story. We started selling milk in Christchurch in 2014, and I couldn't keep up with demand. And we were growing so fast and doubling every year. And it's just the costs of distribution, the costs of processing, the regulatory compliance, and then dealing with retailers. And we just couldn't quite make it work financially. And the way I explain it is, you know, there was money for two people, but there was work for three people. Yes. And then as we grew, there was work for four people and money for three people. So we never... It's an efficiency problem. And, you know, we see a lot of raw milk suppliers or family farmers start supplying milk. And raw milk's the easiest because you don't really need a huge amount of equipment. But it's – and I think it becomes a novelty for a lot of people. And for about a year, they can probably sell enough milk to make it worthwhile. And then – I think apathy sets in. Only the real hardcore will travel to the farm to pick it up or go to the extraordinary lengths you need to go to in order to get it. So there's a number of battles you're fighting. You need to make it convenient for customers. You need to make it affordable. And, of course, all behind the farm gate and in the factory, you need to be doing it in a cost-effective manner. And that's normally, it's you need lots of money to have the latest equipment, and not many people are prepared to, you know, spend $1 million to build a factory when you haven't sold a litre of milk yet.
No. Tell me about your vision for your milk supply. What is it you're trying to achieve?
Well, I've always wanted to I wanted to make an alternative path for farmers to go farming. I've always been a dairy farmer, and I did take a time, but 10 years out, but I always wanted to go back to dairy farming. And at the time in the 2000s, dairy was booming. And to be a dairy farmer, and for me to get ahead as a dairy farmer, I had to really become a share milker or attach myself to an equity partnership. And there's a model that you have to fit in, and you have to go along with that model, or else you won't get the banks won't bank you. And so to get into a farm ownership was, well, I guess, high intensity modern dairy farming. And I thought, well, why don't we just sell our milk locally? Instead of getting 60 cents a litre, surely we could get, clear $1.20 a litre or something like that. And that was how naive of me it was. But so what I'm really wanting to do is, farmers all around the world should be able to say, we're going to supply our local market with milk. We're going to farm the way we want to farm. And that's not meaning you have to be, inefficient or, hippie type farmers. You just want to farm sustainably, and you just don't want to get too intensive. But there's so much involved with that. There's milk processing, there's distribution, and then there's marketing and sales. And trying to get it all to work together is a bit of a juggling act. So our goal for Happy Cow Milk is to build this platform, build this system, build this cost-effective equipment that just, we call it a milk factory in a box. It arrives on your farm, you plug it into the internet, and you're now a fully compliant milk processor. And then what happens is then we have the other side of it, which is, how do you tell the world about your milk? How do you choose the right customers? We have an online platform, so you order our milk online, and then we will deliver it to collection points throughout the local city, and then all payment gets done through our app. So what happens is, you don't have to worry about non-payment. You know exactly how much milk you need to produce any particular day. And it's all around providing efficiency to the farmer, and you can get milk at an affordable price.
So you're not just about your farm and your cows and your customers. You've got a vision there for having a platform and a system and equipment that I myself could be an aspiring dairy farmer, and I could plug into you and pick up all your knowledge and experience and equipment and marketing and start supplying my local community.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Yeah. Yeah.
How wonderful.
Because I don't own any cows anymore, because in 2018 I had to put my company into receivership. We just ran out of cash flow, a combination of fast growth. And that's when I really got so much support from, well, literally global support. So that is our model. We know how to actually start a milk factory. You start with $2 million, you build a great factory, you put it on a farm, and then you get as much volume as you can out, and you supply your local market. So there's people already doing that, but you have to be an expert milk processor. You have to start doing thousands of litres a day to actually make that model work. So I thought, well, that's why do you have to spend $1 million or $2 million? And I'm not joking. That's actually what you do have to spend at the end of the day. So I thought, well, why couldn't we spend more like $50,000 to $100,000 and just sell 200 litres a day? And then if you can do 200 litres a day, it would be great to just have a little add-on where you just double it. Now you do 400. So we have this a modular milk factory in a box. So the box turns up. It's a milk factory, but a person can't fit in it. It houses our equipment and inside it. And that's really to reduce costs, so you don't have to build a milk factory or building or a container plant. And as you grow, you can just bolt on an extra tank, which now means you double production. And you can grow grow as demand, grow with demand. So,
do you miss your cows?
I do like the cows. I do. Actually, it's quite therapeutic. I do like the cows. I don't know if I'll ever milk a cow again, but it was really nice. I built a mobile cow shed, and what that enabled me to do is milk off leased land. Because there's lots of land out there, but you can't milk off it because there's not a cow shed on there. And the cow shed's normally got lots of concrete things and effluent systems. So I leased three blocks of land and milked, started off with seven cows and just milked them in the paddock. And I think there's something there. We think maybe wouldn't go fully mobile next time, but I think a more portable.
So when it rained, you got wet?
Absolutely, yeah. Well, I was so short of money, I thought we don't need a roof.
And the milk that you supply to customers, is it raw or do you process it? What do you do?
So we've pasteurized the milk, but mm-hmm. we don't have anything else to it. And mm-hmm. I think a lot of people actually don't understand what actually happens to milk.
No.
So raw milk's what comes out of the cow.
Yes.
It's around 4% fat, 4% protein, and it has all the enzymes and everything intact. And it's not necessarily high in bacteria. It's if you have a clean cow shed and you wash teats and things like that, your raw milk should have very low bacteria. To pasteurize milk is when you heat it up to, it's a heat and time combination. So we heat it up to 68 degrees for 2 minutes and then cool it down again, and that kills, all the bacteria. And it's technically safe. The thing with the fat and the protein is exactly the same. If all you do is you pasteurize it, nothing changes other than you've inactivated some of the enzymes and the bacteria's lower. What people will do is they'll go to the supermarket and drink milk, and they say, oh, wow, this is so different to raw milk. It must be because it's pasteurized. But that's not the case. What you're drinking is standardized and homogenized milk, and that really, really changes the milk. So mm-hmm. probably drink our milk and raw milk, and you wouldn't really taste the difference. I think
okay.
possibly it might be a little bit sweeter, the pasteurized milk.
Mm. What's homogenization is where they stir it all up and the fats sort of dissolve in the milk, is it? Homogenization?
If you put a bottle of milk and leave it in the fridge after about 24 hours, the cream will rise to the top.
Yep.
Homogenization is when they squeeze the milk through a really small hole under pressure, and that causes the fat globule to break up into lots of little fat globules, and that way they stay suspended in the milk.
Okay.
Homogenized milk, you won't get the cream rising to the top.
Okay. And what's standardized milk?
Well, back in the old days, a cow produces, it fluctuates how much cream she produces, depending on the stage of lactation. So a cow will produce about 4% fat, sometimes up to 6. And the legal definition of whole milk or full cream milk is 3.2% fat, I think. So what standardization is they put it through a separator and skim off the cream, and then they would do a quick little calculation and add some back so that you get to about that
3%. I see.
Yeah, so it standardizes the cream. What happened in the about the 90s is instead of just standardizing the cream, they invented the ultrafiltration process, and now milk is standardized, but it's actually deconstructed right down to the molecular level. And this is where you get the term permeate from, that people may have heard of. So, back in the old days, you'd have skim milk and you'll have cream. Nowadays, you have white water, which is called permeate, and then retentate, which is all the stuff that's left behind, which is essentially cream, but way down to all the protein and everything in there as well. So then essentially they add some of that retentate back to the white water, and that's how you get your 3.2% fat and protein milk in the supermarket. And I think it's that standardization that really changes the milk.
I can't drink it. I can't drink it. It just tastes like shit. And I never drank milk as an adult. Ever.
Right.
And people very seldom do. And when I got my milk straight from the farm, I thought, well, this would be interesting. I might die. I really did think I might get sick and die, right? And I poured this glass of milk and I sat there and I drank it. And it was so glorious. I felt as though like the sun came up, I could taste the grass, and I think it was harking back to the memories of being a child and drinking real milk then.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went to bed and I slept so well because I think this milk was just sustaining me in the night. And night and day, and then I did a test of getting some supermarket milk and comparing it. And honest to goodness, well, you know, there is absolutely no comparison. You can't, you shouldn't even be calling what's in the supermarket milk when you taste real milk. And our kids loved the milk from the farm, absolutely loved it. Like it was their snack, you know, biscuit and a glass of milk. Like we were as kids and going to bed, they'd always have a glass of milk. And I used to mix milk with a banana, a raw egg and bone broth, and they would chunk that down for breakfast. And my oldest girl still does. She's 12. Mm. And that's her breakfast. And they love it. And so this is a big deal, what you're doing. It's a huge deal.
Yeah, well, people don't understand the taste difference so much. So when people talk about us, it's more about reusable packaging or how we farm.
Mm.
But it's actually about the taste. And when they actually taste the milk, that's where it really changes. And we notice milk consumption is wherever we start supplying milk. Families will say, oh, we'll do 2 litres every 3 days or something, and now we're 2 litres a day.
Yeah, yeah, we were the same with kids. And tell me, there is the suggestion, you may know the answer to this, you may not, or it may not be knowable or known. There's a suggestion that pasteurisation kills good bacteria that's in the milk that supposedly helps you digest it, and that it also kills proteins, enzymes that are in the milk that also help you digest it. Have you ever looked into that?
Yeah, I think there's something there. I think, the way you test that milk is pasteurized is you do an alkaline phosphatase test. So alkaline phosphatase is an enzyme, and if the enzyme is active, then the milk has not been pasteurized. And if it's inactive, then that's the sign that the milk has been pasteurized. So that's showing that there is pasteurization is affecting the enzymes. I wouldn't know how important that is. I grew up drinking raw milk, and I drink now pasteurized milk now. As far as the proteins go, I really wouldn't know. It's obviously killing good bacteria because it's killing bacteria as well. So there's an effect there, definitely. Mm.
I have known people personally who were quite lactose intolerant but could drink raw milk.
I would find
that astonishing.
No, well, we get exactly the same thing. And I think they're drinking non-standardized milk rather than raw milk.
Yes, because we don't know. It's such a complicated. You know how I describe milk? I describe milk like this. Everything we eat, putting aside God, wasn't designed for us to eat. Like, you know, a carrot isn't. We've sort of subverted it to produce food for us, or, you know, an animal or wheat. You know, it's a seed. And we get in there and we eat it and chomp through it. Milk is the only product that evolution, if you think like that, has designed to nurture mammals. And it's been produced for 230 million years, how long mammals have been on Earth. And you think there's nothing else that I can think of on the planet that is designed to be a nutritious food. Everything else is subverted from something else. It's extraordinary food.
Oh, I was talking to a scientist, and he said we're talking about the precision fermentation and people saying they're going to make milk in the lab. And she was just saying, we don't know how complicated milk is. She says it's like blood. We don't know how to produce it. We can't produce it in the lab. It's extraordinary. Yeah.
And I think of an egg as the same, right? An egg is extraordinary because you look at an egg and there's that, you know, liquid and then that yellow, but you think everything that's in there is enough to make a chocolate. There's a lot in there going on, right? Because it just looks like a bit of goo, but it's everything there that can make a chalk. Tell me, on your webpage, you too talk about the calves, and I was fascinated by that, and I imagine that's a big deal, because tell us about the difference from a cow's perspective. How does a cow get along in your system, because it's about the cows being happy, compared to the cows in a traditional dairy system?
Yeah, so I stumbled across this cow and calf contact thing quite by accident, because I bought my 7 cows and they all calved, and I needed to test my mobile cow shed, and I had no calf rearing facility, so I just left the calves with their mothers. And one thing led to another, and people would ask me at farmers markets, what do you do with your calves? And I sort of rather embarrassedly just said, oh, I just sort of leave them with their mothers. And they said, that's fantastic. And then I became known as the guy who leaves his calves with their mothers. So we just kept doing it. And I was able to do it because we milked the cows in the paddock. We didn't really have fences, and the calves just went wherever they wanted. And then when they got to about 8 weeks or sort of 100 kgs, I would separate them. And, yeah, it was I'm a proponent of it now, because, one, the dairy industry has a bad reputation.
Just let me understand this, because you know this backwards and I know nothing. So your cow would have a calf. The calf is sucking on mum's teat. Getting its milk. There's still enough milk for you to milk.
Yeah. So, but as the calf gets to around that 6 week mark, it starts drinking a lot of milk.
Yeah.
So you have very, very good calves. The calves are fantastically well grown. But there is a commercial aspect that comes into it. And I'm like, okay, as soon as you don't need milk, I'm turning it off, because.
Got it. Right. You need the milk.
But yeah, no, you can take the calf will just drink lots of little amounts of milk over a 24-hour period, and there is always milk left over. But sometimes the cow will come in and you'll see a calf drinking just before I'm about to milk the cows, and I'm like, oh, just wait 10 minutes, please, because they've all emptied out before
it. How much milk do you get off a cow?
I think. You should be getting about 20 litres a day from a cow if you milked it twice a day.
How many?
20.
Gosh, it's a lot of milk, isn't it? Poor cow.
New Zealand is pretty low production compared to the rest of the world. If you go to Israel, Saudi Arabia, parts of the US, they'll be doing 40 litres a cow per day. All New Zealand's production.
So what then do you do with your calf? It's 8 weeks, it's all feeding grass. What then happens to the calf? Do you keep some, kill some? What happens?
Well, we want to keep the females, or
yes,
the females, and they'll go back into the herd, ideally.
Yes.
But I was never in the position where I could do that. I basically just sold them to beef farmers.
Okay. But you'd ideally keep them. And what's the working life of a cow, if I can use that phrase?
Well, I think the average lifespan of a cow in the dairy industry is probably 7 years, 6 to 7 years.
Gosh, you would get to know them.
Yeah, well, I mean, depending who you ask, a cow will last or live about 14-odd years, up to 20, depending who you ask. But, yeah, so a calf grows up to 2 years old, where it'll enter the herd at age two. It'll have its first calf and start milking. And then it basically does 4 or 5 lactations, and the statistics show that she then exits the herd, which then she heads off to the works.
Okay.
Some cows are milked twice a day, some once a day. So basically the life of a cow is you eat grass, you sit down, you chew your cud, you get up, walk to the cow shed, get milked, and do it all again.
But in your case, you're the one that drives to the paddock. They don't have to walk to the cow shed.
I don't do that now. I've partnered with a farmer in just south of Auckland. So we've installed our equipment on their farm.
Okay. And
they run a fairly traditional low-intensity dairy farm where the cows walk to the paddock, walk to a cow shed, and basically every calving he, you know, not this whole herd, but he has a portion of his cows. He's experimenting with the cow and calf contact.
Mm.
And I guess my biggest problem is a lot of our supporters support us because of our animal welfare.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is, I would say 99% of farmers want nothing to do with cow and calf contact.
No.
And so I'm really trying to change the opinions in the industry there, because I think it's worthwhile from a public perception perspective and for them.
So for the animal. I'm a would-be customer living in Auckland. How do I go about getting happy cow milk?
So we've... you can only buy our milk online.
Yes.
You find a collection point close to you. So we've really just started this model.
Yes.
We've partnered with local dairies because they're open long hours. They're family operated businesses and they're really keen to work with our reusable bottle system. So jump online, sign up, open up an account and order a bottle of milk. And then we deliver on Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays, and select your local collection point, and we will deliver milk to that collection point, and you get an email when we've delivered it.
And how big an area is supplied by Happy Cow Milk as it stands?
Currently, we're just in Auckland, so we're really sort of. Titirangi and where are we? I have to learn Auckland. We're in the city. We're around Grey Lynn and anywhere along the southern motorway, basically. So we'll mm-hmm. start up a place, an outlet in Takanini and one in the Bombay Hills, and we're in Mount Wellington. So we're increasing all the time.
And your vision is this could go right through New Zealand.
Well, my plan now is I just need to get the system working. We need to prove it works and hone in exactly how to do it, because we thought milk dispensers was the way to go, and sort of spent 12 months figuring out that that's not going to work. And now I'll shoot back to Christchurch hopefully soon, and we'll set up our Christchurch farmer. And really we're talking to farmers everywhere then, and it's really any farmer who's interested who sort of meets our criteria will be able to.
And when you say dairy farmer, when you say farmer, are you thinking of a traditional dairy farmer as your target, or could it be a hobby farmer with 10 acres?
I think the hobby farmer is going to be more and more. We're perfectly set up. We've got a little milking, we can help you set up a little milking plant very cheaply, maybe 5 sets of cups, 10 sets of cups. We've got our small little 200 litre tanks. So that's doable. The only problem is I would caution people, if you're going to sell less than sort of 400 litres a day, I'm not sure if it's going to be economic.
Okay. I mean,
then people might just say, look, we want to do this and it pays the mortgage and maybe a holiday, something like that. You know,
So 400 litres is what, 25,
it's a mess.
20 cows?
Yeah. Look, 20 cows, you could probably pay your mortgage, cover your costs, and maybe there's 20K falling out the bottom if you don't pay yourself.
And it's a big commitment, though, isn't it? Like, it's not like another job where you can leave for a week. The cows have got to be looked after.
Well, there's that. I mean, your cows always need to be fed. The other thing is your customers rely on you to provide the milk, and you can't just go on holiday.
No.
But
there a lot to know?
Not really. Yes and no. I mean, you can pick it up pretty quick. I mean, you'll probably make some silly mistakes in your first 2 years, but you get it's not hard.
Well, I guess we've been looking after cows since forever, right?
They're pretty much cows look after themselves fairly well. There's a rule of thumb: if she doesn't look well, put a thermometer in there. If the temperature's high, you can probably fix it. If the temperature's low, she's probably a goner.
Oh, wow.
That's a simple test.
And if it's high and you can fix it, do you call a vet?
Ah, probably in the early days you'll call a vet, and that's a couple of $100. But yes. Then as you get into it, you'll probably find maybe she's got mastitis, maybe she's got some sort of infection going on. But cows are pretty resilient, and they don't really get sick that often. It's more, you know, she maybe won't get in calf or something like that. So if you're
And how do you get a, do you get a bull around? You got to get a bull?
Thing. Most of the dairy industry will artificially inseminate their herd. That's more complicated because now you've got to figure out when she's on heat, and AB technicians don't want to come around to a little farmer with 20 cows. So it's easier just to get a bull in there, but bulls have their own problems. And they wreck everything, and they scratch on gates and bend them and jump.
Typical men.
Yeah. So the bulls. There's no easy answer, basically. What happens is you dip your toe in and you think, oh, this can't be so hard. Oh, wouldn't it be lovely to get up in the sun shining and milk the cow and take the milk to the local dairy and things, and oh, that'd be lovely. But then when the bull jumps out and
fence is gone.
Yeah. And it's raining.
I love baking, and I bake a lot of bread for my family. And I can't imagine doing it for a business. I think it'd be a similar thing, because every day the customers, the volume, and no one appreciates what it takes to produce a traditional loaf of bread compared to the rubbish you get at the dairy. Like, it's hours of work. It's so much work. And they just throw it through a machine and mash it up and add chemicals and all the rest of it. And that's part of the problem, that when you're producing food traditionally with your labour and healthily, it's a huge commitment that a person milking 1,000 cows selling it to Fonterra doesn't have. And you have to cover that cost when you buy it. And it's so tough. So very, very tough. And I've looked at baking bread and I thought, you just can't, you couldn't do it. It would kill you to be trying to bake bread on a scale where you could get a reasonable living from. And you'd lose, and then, as you say, you've got your customers, so it's, every day. So I feel that for a dairy farmer and a small-scale farmer trying to do it a traditional way, it's a lot of work and a huge commitment. How do you feel? I'm always troubled by this, and I don't want to put you into a bad spot, but isn't it wrong that we take this beautiful product, milk, and make powder out of it?
Yeah, well, I mean, you don't have to refrigerate it then, don't you? You take a perishable product, take the water out of it, and now you can send it overseas. And I think New Zealand's entire economy is reliant on us.
Yes. When I look at milk powder, it just seems so inert and dead and pathetic. And when you see milk, it's so nice. And I think, oh, wow. You could make cheese out of that, and butter, all these wonderful things, and yet we suck all the water out and put it in a packet. Just seems somehow wrong.
Yeah, but the problem may be, but New Zealand only consumes about 3% of our dairy produce. So,
and we can't export it as milk because it's so expensive and perishable.
The economics around that is that you're exporting water, so you may as well take the water out of it.
Yeah.
And then put the water back into it.
Does it taste the same when you add water?
Oh, I wouldn't know. I don't think anyone. I think the powdered milk wouldn't go into liquid milk.
I see.
So powdered milk. New Zealand is really an ingredient supplier. So if you look on the label, there's milk powder and just about. Oh, you'll be surprised at how much products have a little bit of milk powder.
Like you might buy a biscuit that's got milk powder in it.
Yeah, that's what New Zealand does. We don't, it's not liquid milk at all. No.
I didn't appreciate that.
Milk is produced by local dairy farmers in whatever country you are around the world.
And what about cheese making?
Well, cheese is like making bread. It's I don't know how people make money with cheese making.
Because it's so labor intensive.
Yeah, exactly. So, I love my cheese. And actually, this is what someone said to me. They said, there'd be so many more vegans if it wasn't for cheese. She said, I couldn't be a vegan because of cheese. Cheese is fascinating. My cousin started a little cheese factory as well years ago, and he loved it. And it just comes down to economics, doesn't it?
Yeah. Well, we live in an interesting age when we're all busy working, and we do, and there's so many jobs that strike me as non-jobs, you know, people walking around with clipboards and ticking boxes, and I've been chatting to builders and how much of their job is, you know, filling out forms and checking this and checking that when you just used to build a house. And we have a lot of people sitting in offices on computers doing goodness knows what, but they look busy. And we have less and less people actually making things and growing things and producing things. And that's been a phenomenal shift over my lifetime, actually. And we're sort of bearing the consequences of this. And so our food has become technological. And we're now beginning to count the cost of that, both in terms of the poor supplier who is on a financial treadmill as a farmer, and at the behest of corporate New Zealand. And then as a consumer, we're disconnected from the cows, we're disconnected from the farmers, and we don't even know where our food comes from. And we're now beginning to realize, I think, that we're eating processed food and ultra-processed food, which is not necessarily the best thing for our kids or for us, for our health. And we're struggling as a people like yourself. You're at the supply end, I'm at the customer end. We're struggling to try and think of how could we build this model? And that's why you're so fascinating, rebuild the model, because that's what you're about.
Yeah, I think I read somewhere like food has never been so cheap in all
no.
of and you know, even in the 30s, people in Europe were starving for lack of food.
Yes.
And now, you know, I guess chicken used to be a treat back in yes. the 40s. You'd have a chicken once a year. Now it's yes. Consumed food, and that's industrialized meat production, basically, the genetics.
Yes.
And when you look at milk, it's the same. Every decision that's been made in the milk factories is to try and increase the economics. So your milk goes through all these different processes. You know, it's a clarifier that gets rid of, you know, the little any foreign objects in there. Well, that's fine. But then it's like standardization is to make factories can they get about 10% more milk when you standardize the milk.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And then it's the way it's pasteurized, it's the way it's packaged. All this stuff is now to increase shelf life. So if you're a company and you can get a 14-day shelf life, well, now you can do, well, essentially you could do one delivery a week to an outlet. For us, our shelf life is only really sort of 8 to 10 days. So that means that we have to do regular deliveries to keep the milk fresh. And partly food isn't meant to really last a long time.
No. If your McDonald's is sitting on the shelf and it's not decomposing, there's something wrong with it. Yeah, you shouldn't eat it.
People's reference point is the supermarket milk. Okay, so this is what supermarket milk costs. And when you say it's going to cost 50 cents more or a dollar more, you know, in people's mind, milk costs a certain amount. And, yeah, so it's difficult. But there's so many people who are, like, we've decided internally we're here for milk lovers. If you don't love milk, well, then you're not our customer, because you either understand and appreciate what real milk is and you'll, you know, pay – you know, I think we charge 30 cents more than Fonterra for our milk. Now, I can't explain the amount of heartache, pain, and tears that have gone into making it.
That's 30 cents.
That we can produce milk that's only 30 cents more expensive than Fonterra. Like, but what we need is we needed to make the milk affordable. So we've got our milk at $2.99 a litre.
Wow.
I think Fonterra's milk is $2.60, $2.70. So our milk will be, you'll get it the next day, and it is super fresh, far superior product, and comes in a reusable bottle. So the only problem with that is that, we require, basically, to make this work, we do need to get a certain amount of volume. And so we've bet that we can do it. And if we don't get the volume, then, well, I guess I will say after probably 10 to 12 years of this, I'll say it can't be done.
Well, let's try and help you. I've just been on your webpage. It's wonderful. If you're living in Auckland, you should go to Happy Cow Milk and sign up. I promise you, you will not believe the difference. And if you have young kids, oh my goodness, what do you want them to do when they come home from school? Do you want them to sort of eat some rubbish cookie or have a glass of milk or before they go to bed? Trust me, they want that beautiful milk and they will become milk lovers. It's extremely good for kids. My kids thrived on milk, still do, but it's got to be not supermarket milk. I don't know. I don't know what it is. So go on to Happy Cow Milk, sign up, and we'll see if Glenn can produce enough milk to keep you happy as well as his cows. Tell me, you said you raised some amount of money from customers. Were they buying shares of a cow? Or what was the go there? Or was there a subscription service that you were running? Because that's quite common too with cows, isn't it?
Yeah, we started. What we did was we sold shares in the company Happy Cow Milk Limited. So we've done three rounds of crowdfunding.
Okay. Okay.
Since 2019. So now our fans, I guess, own them 40% of the company now. And that 1.2 million, it sounds like a lot, but it's basically gone into electronics, it's gone into software, it's gone into regulatory compliance stuff, and we've built this milk factory in a box that's a prototype and it's working. It could be 20 times better. I'm frustrated when I look at it every day because I know what I want to do. So we've got that sorted, but we didn't have our path to market sorted. So we came here to Auckland because this is where the Good Farmer was, and we had dispensers. We've got cafe dispensers, and people have been telling us for 3 years, yeah, we'll have a dispenser in our location. We got up here, and everyone was like, no, you can't put that dispenser in our shop. And foodstuffs, we're not interested. Dairies are too small. We really struggled to find a place to put them. So we've got two dispensers actually running, one in North Shore and one in Titirangi, and they go really well.
And that's like a core, you flash a card over and the milk drops out the bottom or something.
Well, it's not even that simple. It's you just push a button and milk comes out the spout, and then you go and pay for it at the checkout.
Ah, wow. So there's a big container and you bring your own container in.
Yeah, we'll sell you a bottle and then you just bring it back every time, wash it at home and bring it back. Now, that's great. The problem is you've got space problems. You've got people don't clean their bottles, I tell you. I look at these bottles that people are filling up and I'm like, oh my gosh, you should clean that a little bit better.
Yeah.
But one of the biggest problems for us on the farm is matching supply with demand. So there's fluctuating supply. That means cows don't produce the same amount of milk every day.
Yeah.
You have fluctuating demand. So some weeks are busy, some weeks are not. School holidays. Days are quiet, and there's a real cost to delivering 50 litres of milk to a dispenser, and then you come back 5 days later and it hasn't really sold. So now we have to take that back because we've got such a shorter shelf life, and essentially that's a loss that we have to we have to eat up, and essentially that goes into our price as well. So that's why we've gone with this model of we're asking people to either subscribe, so you do a weekly order, or just go to our website. Once you've logged in, it just automatically logs you in, and when you need milk, you just click one more bottle, please, or two more bottles, and then the next day it'll be at your collection point. But what that does is it tells us this is the demand for that day, and we only process what we need for that day.
Well, I'm looking forward to the day that here in Central Otago, I can click on the Happy Cow webpage and order my milk and pick it up when I'm picking the kids up from school or going into town. That would be amazing.
You've got Windy Ridge down your way.
I don't know of it.
Google Windy Ridge. They are they're a farmer around there. They supply Central Otago, and they'll be very similar milk.
Okay. Well, there we have it, Glenn Herod. Amazing. I so want you to succeed. I so want you to do well. This could be, and you must feel it, you must be incredibly jaded.
Oh, I just, I don't get excited anymore and I don't get sad anymore.
Well, you sound like I was in politics, you know. I was in politics, I learned not to think things are going well or things are going badly. It was just, you know, another day, and you chugged your way through it. Yeah. And because you start off with such a lot of enthusiasm, and it gets knocked out of you, and then you do because you're stubborn. You just keep trudging, and you can see your goal at the end, and you know if you keep working at it, you'll get there. You will get there.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I don't know what else I would do. I think this is what I'm here to do. I think we're working on something worthwhile. I really do think that. I think people do want it. And, you know, we always run out of money and then somehow more comes along somehow and we get a little bit closer to the goal. So I think, yeah, everything takes more time and costs more. And, yeah, there's a big price to pay, but I think the world would be better if we are successful. So that's kind of why.
Happy Cow Milk, Google it. Read about Glenn, read about what he's doing. If you're in Auckland, you're blessed because you can get this milk and you can bring the taste of the farm to your table for your kids and for yourselves in the evening. You can have a nice glass of milk. And other milk will never taste the same. You'll be transformed like I was back to being a little kid, bathed in that sunshine and grass of your youth. Glenn, good luck. I look forward to you spreading around all of New Zealand. It could be a model that changes things for the better, because in many ways the model is applicable to other farm products too. I'm thinking bread and cheese and all the rest of it. And what you're doing is making it easier for an individual to get into that business, rather than have to reinvent the wheel. You've invented the wheel, and it's available to them just to come in and work with. So good on you. I wish you every success, and thank you for being a listener. Oh, and I've got to tell you this. Oh, my goodness. Have you got great customers? Because your customers keep emailing me, and they keep telling me how great you are, how great your milk is, and I've got to have you on our show. So you've got a very, very loyal fan base. So you're doing something right.
Oh, they do what they literally do what keeps us going. When we get a lot of that positive feedback is literally what keeps me going.
Well, I know that feeling on the show. I live for my texts and my emails, because it's the feedback that makes you think, okay, I'm on again. Glenn, thank you very much. Good luck to you, sir. That was Glenn Herod. H-E-R-U-D. What a guy. Bucking the trend and providing real milk. And how lucky you are that you can be provided with real milk. And I can't believe the price. Trust me, that's an extremely good price for real milk, because it just doesn't, there's massive overheads, massive work into making that milk, as you heard. You're on Rally Check Radio, Real Talk with Rodney Hyde. Send me a text, 2057, email me inbox@rallycheck.radio. Thank you for listening.
With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom. Simply visit www.realitycheck.radio/donate to make a difference today.